Good morning, Wisconsin. Morning, world. It's a new year, it's a new day, and welcome to the morning show here at WFHR. Thank you for kicking off your day with us. Got your host, James J., behind the mic at 9:05. Got Melissa and Beth here. We're going to get into some fun this hour. A little bit later, we got a 8 life-enhancing New Year's resolutions that you might actually stick to. We will get into that. Got some Danny Wright stuff, good stories of the day, all that coming up for you, of course. But right now, time to open up the kitchen.
All right. It's Monday, January 2nd, 2023. Wow, I wrote that wrong. Welcome to the new year. We thought we would start with the basics on the kitchen's open. It's a new year and all, so let's go back to the beginning.
A very good place to start.
No, not that, Beth. Oh. Not that beginning. We're going to talk about kitchens.
Okay.
First off, what is a kitchen? Well, that depends on what field you're in.
Mm-hmm.
If you play a stringed instrument with a bunch of other people, a kitchen is the percussion section of an orchestra.
Well, there you go.
All right. But if you're a chef or a home cook, a kitchen is the room or area where food is prepared and cooked.
Yes.
So let's take a look at kitchens and the important role they play in our daily lives.
Absolutely. Now, the names for rooms in our homes often have the word room in it, right? So we've got the bedroom, we've got the living room, we've got the bathroom and the laundry room. So one smart 11-year-old asked on a website, Grammarphobia, why isn't the kitchen called the cooking room? If all the other rooms are rooms, why isn't the cooking room?
Well, if we look at the etymology of the word or the linguistic history of the word kitchen, it is likely older than any of those other room names that we currently use.
Wow.
Both words, kitchen and cook, can be traced back to the Latin verb cocuere, meaning to cook.
Okay.
From this verb came the later Latin noun cocuina, meaning a kitchen. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, the word was first recorded around the year 1000, but it was spelled differently than we spell it now. So Old English spellings were C-Y-C-E-N-E, pronounced Kaikan, and K-Y-C-E-N-A-N, pronounced Kaikana. Kaikanan.
Kaikanan. All right. Well, the oldest kitchen found was actually in a large cave in South Africa.
Yeah.
Large. I mean, like the size of an airplane hangar. Large.
That's big.
Big. The Wonderwork Cave in Northern Cape Province was explored by 4 Israeli scientists as part of an international team that made the discovery of the oldest evidence of fire used by mankind. So
cool.
The oldest time, the first time fire was used by humans.
That they found.
This predates the earliest accepted find of humans using fire by around, get this, 300,000 years. Not
so
just 300.
That's about 1 million years ago.
Yeah. So by studying microscopic traces of wood ash found near animal bones as well as stone tools, they were able to establish the age of the activities that took place in the cave with good certainty. One of the international scientists, Michael Chazin, from the University of Toronto, said, socializing around the campfire might actually be an essential aspect of what makes us human. Their study was published in April of 2012 in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
That's awesome. So, you know, there's a reason why we like gathering around a campfire
and
talking and eating and having a good time.
It's not a modern concept.
No. The Israeli scientists were fundamental in helping date the findings at the cave. The Dolomite Cave, Dolomite is a type of limestone, is at least 2 billion years old, but likely saw its earliest inhabitants closer to 2 million years ago.
Okay.
So the scientists, Kolska, Horwitz, couldn't say for sure if people were living in the cave when they were using it as a kitchen a million years ago. But they do know from later periods that people lived and slept in caves, but those had a proper hearth built around where the campfire would be. Those appear around 40,000 years ago. Once the hearth was invented, people were using fire in a much more routine manner.
Hmm.
Horwitz said before that, working with fire was probably more like trial and error as you burn down the kitchen. Oops.
You darn. Got to go find a new house, new place to cook that fire. But cooking food over fire does have and has had some challenges. The smoke and soot caused by fires were a big problem until around the 16th century when chimneys became a common feature in homes. They started using chimneys in castles as early as the 12th century, but most common folks still built fires in the middle of the floor or back of the house, and smoke would just fill the room. It would escape through the thatched roof, though, killing bugs along the way.
Added, you know, bonus.
Good bonus. And giving the thatch a little bit more waterproofing. Another bonus.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the 16th or 17th century that chimneys became a more commonplace thing for most people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about the disparity of wealth. It was quite a bit different then, too.
Oh, yeah.
So smoke was still an issue as fireplaces were large to accommodate cooking pots, and a lot of smoke would still enter the house from the chimney.
Mm-hmm.
A Paris physician, Louis Savat, did a scientific study of smoky chimneys, during the 16th century. Now, he suggested narrowing the width of the fireplace and having a smooth flue.
Okay.
So previous to that, chimneys were often made with wattle and daub, which was a wooden structure covered by mud, clay, straw, and dung. As you could imagine, these often caught fire.
Yeah.
So in the early 17th century, English courts demanded that dangerous chimneys be reconstructed with brick and mortar, and that chimneys extend at least 4.5 feet above the roof. By 1719, all clay-built chimneys in England were ordered to be rebuilt of brick.
Okay.
But in America, chimneys were still often built of wood and lined with clay.
Mm.
Fires were common.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until the 1740s when Benjamin Franklin invented the Pennsylvania fireplace that they started to address the issue of smoke in homes in America and as a way to keep more of heat in the home instead of escaping up the chimney.
As well as keeping our lungs safer.
Correct, because that's a lot of smoke to be breathing in on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But when your choices are be warm or be warm and inhale smoke
or be cold
and die.
It's
not a whole lot of options there.
It kind of helps explain why the mortality rate was so low back then.
Yeah.
But by the late 1700s, metal stoves were coming into use as a way to keep more heat in the home and allow smoke to be vented outside.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the way of kind of balancing that out for us. These were used for cooking, though. They weren't used for cooking. So they were just specifically for heating.
Mm-hmm.
In 1834, Philo Stewart designed a compact wood-burning cast iron stove called the Oberlin stove. These were a huge commercial success. By 1869, these iron stoves had evolved into specialized cooking appliances with a flue pipes connected to the chimney, oven holes, and installations for heating water.
Yeah, some of them had just like bells and whistles. They would have a cover that you could put over for baking, and they have a bunch of different doors and areas that you could heat stuff or cook stuff.
So it was the precursor to the modern oven where you can have all sorts of different bells and whistles on it.
Mm-hmm.
But they moved to gas stoves by the 1920s to further cut down on air pollution, deforestation, and climate change. Mm-hmm. And by the late 1920s and 1930s, that's when electric ovens began to compete against all of these gas stoves.
Yes. So the evolution of kitchens to what we know them as today took place over the 20th century. Before that, most kitchens didn't even have a sink.
Hmm.
Rich households would have a dry kitchen and a wet kitchen, or as they called it, a scullery.
Okay.
Floors were stone slabs or tiles. In the Victorian kitchen, they would use a rectangular wooden table for the preparation of meals and a dresser for storage.
Interesting. I can't imagine having a dresser, you know, instead of our cabinets, but that's what it was. And after the First World War, new homes had smaller kitchens that were more functional. Cupboards were painted in gloss white oil paint to make them easy to clean, and toe spaces were added under floor units to make standing at the cupboard a little bit more comfortable. So that little gap that you see at the bottom of your lower cabinets, that's what that's for, so that you can stand closer to your counter, making it easier to use. Hard floors were replaced with checkerboard lino floors, and sinks stood on legs like a piece of furniture for air circulation to keep them from being damp all the time. To let them dry out.
You don't want mold to grow in your kitchen, so this was a way for them to try to keep that area a little cleaner.
Yes.
So the industrial engineer who invented the efficient modern kitchen didn't actually cook.
What?
Her name was Lillian Boulder Gilbreth, and she was an industrial psychologist and engineer who had 12 children with her husband and partner, Frank B. Gilbreth.
Ooh.
Together, they invented what is known as motion study.
Okay.
Now, this is a method of breaking industrial processes and office tasks down into component parts to make the jobs faster and less taxing. They called them Therblings, which is Gilbreth's, but spelled backwards, their last name. So Lillian used this method to invent a modern and efficient kitchen, the kind still found in many apartments today.
Mm-hmm.
She partnered with the Brooklyn Borough Gas Company to develop Gilbreth's Kitchen Practical, which was unveiled in the 1929 Women's Exposition.
Okay.
Now, her design is still one of the most popular options for contemporary kitchens. She reduced the number of steps needed to complete tasks like mixing a cake, putting it in the oven, and doing the dishes from 281 to only 45.
Wow. That is quite the reduction.
Yes,
she was also... Go ahead.
Obviously, that's just a lot more efficient.
Absolutely. But she was also one of the first working female engineers to hold a PhD and is considered to be the first true industrial organizational psychologist.
Hmm.
Among her other contributions to the modern kitchen, she invented shelves for the refrigerator and a foot pedal for kitchen trash cans.
Even better.
Yes. She also worked on kitchen designs to accommodate individuals with disabilities.
And that's really early in,
yeah.
I would say, the, you know, taking those things into consideration when talking about kitchens and how they work.
Right. So her children later wrote books about their experiences growing up in the Gilbreth household, and Hollywood turned these into movies. You'll never guess which ones they are.
You might have heard of these.
Cheaper by the Dozen in 1950, and mm-hmm. the sequel, Bells on Their Toes, in 1952.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to watch. I watched Cheaper by the Dozen, but it's been so many years
right.
ago that I want to watch it again, knowing this background
yeah.
history to fully experience it. So today's kitchens have a higher focus on being the center of the household with space for entertaining. Many incorporate a table for dining, mm-hmm. islands to create social flows or workspace, and plenty of seating. Modern kitchens have larger appliances that have many additional features. It sounds like they're even working on a smart fridge that can order food for the household or make meal suggestions from what you have inside.
Absolutely. And ovens are becoming voice commanded that you can just tell mm-hmm. it what temperature you want and how long you want it to be there.
Yeah.
And I love houses that have the more open concept where you flow mm-hmm. right from the kitchen into the dining room, making it even more efficient to get
right.
warm food.
Right. Because if your kids are sitting there working on their homework and mm-hmm. you can be in the kitchen working but helping them at the same time.
Absolutely. And so the meal stays warmer longer.
Yeah. So while the efficiency maybe isn't the focus now,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely kind of become the center of the household.
Absolutely. And there are so many things that you can do in a good modern kitchen, and I look mm-hmm. forward to talking about those throughout the year.
Yes, indeed. All right. With that, I think we'll close the kitchen.
That was a good one, you guys. That was really good. One of these, you know, I really wanted this show in place so that I could take a nap, you know, during the morning show here. Everybody mm-hmm. knows I don't sleep enough.
Right.
Thought this way.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stop listening. You guys are making this way too hard to not pay attention. It's a really good show. That was really fun. Thank you so much for that. A great way to kick off the year. Thank you both. We'll take mm-hmm. a break right here. We'll come back. We'll get into some more fun on the morning show at WFHR, locally grown radio. Welcome back to Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. It is 9:21 on the clock. Melissa, Beth, and James here with you. And diving into this next one, I've mentioned the term rabbit hole before. You know, mm-hmm. you get you know, started on something and you go down a rabbit hole on this topic, and before you know it, 5 hours of your life
right.
are gone. I haven't had this happen very often where it's usually I come across a meme or an article or something like that that pulls me in. Not a whole website and not something like this. I want to talk about the website theselyricsdonotexist.com.
Great.
How many of you have heard this one? How many of you are? Okay, Melissa, Beth, you've heard
yep.
of this? Okay,
yep.
Melissa.
I've not heard of the website.
Not
but
the
I've,
website,
you know,
but yeah.
Definitely heard of I sing lyrics that don't exist.
lyrics generated using artificial intelligence. This what? Website generates completely original lyrics for various topics, uses state-of-the-art AI to generate an original chorus and original verses. You can choose the AI song writer, lyrics topic, lyric genre, and lyric mood.
Okay.
I'm not sure how I feel about this.
I wanted to get to that, Melissa. I do. We will. But for right now, I love the idea of where Melissa started with this, because this is where actually it started for me. I was looking up lyrics to a song.
Right.
And it just ended up going down this rabbit hole with it and everything. But we don't need a website to do this for us. We do it every day.
Right.
We think we know what they're singing. Yeah, that's not what they're singing.
No.
Let's have some fun with this one. You type a song topic word and then press generate my lyrics. So let's go ahead with like love. Love's a pretty easy one, right? You have the song topic. I have love in there. And you can put lyrics or lyric mood in as well. I'm not going to do that. Just going to go ahead and type love.
Okay. General.
Yeah, pretty general. And most songs, you know, involve love and everything. So I type love and it pops out a whole song for me within seconds.
Wow.
Does it give you the tune as well?
It doesn't tell you the beat or anything. It just gives you the lyrics.
Okay.
What our love knows, our hearts run fast as we catch it. Our hopes and fears are the parking lot dance. The whole world will have to learn to love. The whole world will have to learn to love. Pre-chorus. So many nights I wait, knowing that our love is rare. Chorus. Oh, I love you, boy. Oh, I love you, my boy. And it may be a big surprise.
How long is this song?
Verse 2. I need a man who can really hold me. I need a man. This is not very comfortable. it just keeps going, everybody. Like,
maybe you should have included some mood.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Give me another
kitchen.
Kitchen. All right, there we go. Kitchen. Let's see what pops up. I type in kitchen and generated pops up lyrics.
Wow.
We never thought it would be me. We never said it right. Dancing around in the kitchen light. Oh my God. That night I had my falling in the kitchen. I told you.
What?
Yes, you got me on the cookie. Kitchen can car serve. Chorus. Me and you deep in the kitchen. Just loosen up the blinds. Baby, where are you going to? Left my troubles by your sister in the kitchen. What is going on? What kind of computer is this? What kind of AI is this?
Now we know why songs are written by humans.
Yeah, apparently. It also reminds me, like, if you've ever looked at, like, if you fall in love with a song that's in a different language and then look up the English version of it.
The translation.
Yeah. It just doesn't play over. It doesn't.
Oh, that's comical. Wow.
I want there to be an artist, and this is the only work they do.
Yes.
But they have to be really talented. like a really, really talented singer and everything, but they just don't write their own songs. They just have this computer just writing their own songs and everything. But because it's me, of course, I have to take the serious end of this too. This brings up an interesting conversation that I think is going to be coming up more and more. One that came out last month or maybe a little bit even before that, there is an AI program that can draw your picture.
Generate
your picture, yes. I think a lot of people saw this right away and thought it was really cool. I could turn myself into a cartoon character or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, a lot of painters, a lot of artists came out and said that this is going to hurt our industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing a very similar thing when I first, because this website's an old website, this lyric generating website, it's been around for a while, but I had just come across it. So I thought, what about this? This has been around a long time. What do people feel about this? And same kind of feedback.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People worrying about that. Now, I think the pushback is certainly, well, look at these lyrics. These lyrics aren't very good. I mean, you know, what is this? You look at some of those paintings, no matter how good they are, are they really going to take away? Well, we're talking about, unless you're from those industries or from the entertainment world, I think it might be hard for people to understand. That's if it takes one job, That's too many.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Every artist out there is, most of them at the very least, are struggling to find work. Mm-hmm. You take away one job, that's one less opportunity for that person. Because it isn't just the job when it comes to entertainment. I get that one gig, and part of it is hoping that other people will see my work. Mm-hmm. So you have no idea what future work that might be creating.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's the in the theater world, your performance is your audition for your next show, for
Absolutely.
Your next gig. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with artists and musicians. You know, each song you do is setting you up for the next thing that you're going to do.
I've got this this student film that I'm going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be all these student films. They get them done and then they send them out to Cannes, Cannes Festival, mm-hmm. Film festivals and stuff. So you never know what can happen. But realistically, I and the director know not many people are going to see this project.
Right.
But the people that do see it are in the know, are in the industry. Mm-hmm. And if one person sees that, her work or my work or something or all of it, and there we go. That launches a career. I mean, millions of careers have been started that way.
It's,
so you take away one job, you just don't know what you might be taking away.
Right.
Well, and the controversy over the AI-generated art thing that happened, that was back in September. And it's because a piece of AI-generated art won a competition.
Yeah.
It was part of the, it came up in, even with a cash prize, $300 cash prize.
Yeah, that's a good note to mention, Melissa. To me, that is almost a separate thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to allow that in contests and everything, then I think that you're really changing the game. You're mm-hmm. changing the rules in the middle of the game almost.
And it's similar to taking the hard work that people have put forward to create art and saying, well, a computer can do it and I have to compete against that. Those
right.
are two different whole efforts that it took to create.
Yeah.
And it's the nice thing about humans creating is it's a unique thing. It's hard for us to reproduce anything exactly the same. You cannot do that. Even our signatures are never, you never have two signatures that are exactly the same. With AI, it could be exactly the same thing over and over and over again. And I know in Native American cultures, they intentionally put an imperfection into their work because they felt if it was perfect, it would entrap a spirit in there, and they didn't want that. So how does this play against some cultural understandings of that as well?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I think that if you're going to do something, especially on the contest level and everything, you've got to have separate categories then,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that, that, especially when it comes to, like, art, art is so much about stillness and attention to detail and those things. Having a computer do something like that and a human being are obviously two very different things. But mm-hmm. then can an AI sing? Can it sing these lyrics? Can an AI do that? There's still limitations in
mm-hmm.
there. And this is more of a devil's advocate argument kind of thing. I'm not saying this is more rhetorical, more open. It took quite a bit of creativity to create this website, to make this.
Yeah.
A human being, came up with that algorithm to be
mm-hmm.
able to do this. Coders made this happen. So there is still creativity in these things. There is still human interactions, our human touch involved in it. Not necessarily the same thing, but is that a new form of art? Is that, we asked this about, what was it, how big it was with auto-tuning.
Mm-hmm.
Auto-tuning was huge for, like 3 years there, or maybe it was just 3 months. but it felt like it had its time
in
the sun.
It was in every song.
Yeah. And I can remember many, many people that I know, because I know a lot of people in the music industry, and I didn't meet one person who wasn't bent out of shape about that, who didn't think that that was a hurting the industry and crushing the industry and stuff. Now, it survived. Music
mm-hmm.
always will. But I think that that's similar to this other conversation.
Right. And I don't think this will ever replace.
Yeah.
Because creativity and artistic expression is just so much a part of who we are in our humanity. And it's what we need to continue to be who we are.
If I could sing well enough, because I could sing good enough to pull off a little bit, but nobody's giving me a record deal.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could, I would put, especially if I was already an established artist, I would put out at least an EP of nothing but these songs that this computer generated. I just want to hear what they sound like right. in real time with the lyric or with the music behind them and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We will take a break here, get to Melissa's news. When we come back, got plenty of fun lined up for you. It's the morning show at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Welcome back, everyone. Mornings on WFHR, locally grown radio. We hope you're having a great start to your new year. I just want to listen to Duran Duran now.
Yes.
They recently, one of the New Year's celebrations they performed at.
Really?
And they did like a full set. And one of my friends was at it. And just could not stop. She did not grow up with Duran Duran. And she could not stop raving about Duran Duran.
This awesome. New band.
Yeah, it actually really kind of was that. It was like she was discovering this whole new band and everything. I'm like, oh.
That's the best. It's like discovering a TV show when all of the seasons are already out and you yes. can just binge watch it.
So right about this. So right about this. I think that some things are fun, certainly, to be culturally in the now and mm-hmm. know, oh, did you see the latest episode, that kind of thing. But some stuff is so much more fun that way.
Right.
To mm-hmm. just be able to, like, it's years after it was big or something like that. You're just catching up or something. I think there's something fun about that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get into an interesting one here, and it comes to us from positive.news.com. 8 life-enhancing New Year's resolutions that you might actually stick to.
Okay. All right.
Lower the bar. No, I'm joking. I do think that we talked about this, actually, I think, in our last show. We need to do a better job in society giving ourselves the win. Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter how big of a win it is. It's a win,
right.
You know? You made it, you got, when you're coming home from work, you got all green lights.
Yeah.
Like, that's mm-hmm. a win. Like,
yeah.
You know, big, you know, things like that. I think a similar thing with New Year's resolutions,
mm-hmm.
especially if you have a big one that means a lot to you. I want to lose some odd amount of weight or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe having other things there to kind of help you build up that winning feeling,
right.
that, you know, that confidence to get to that can be maybe not a bad thing.
Right. Set mm-hmm. yourself up for success.
Yes. Well said. Yeah. So here are 8 New Year's resolutions that lower the bar. No, that you know, could be doable, or at least not so much just doable, mm-hmm. but you know, fun at the same time.
Right.
Like, get to grips with new tools. Oh, I don't mean the cordless drill you got for Christmas necessarily. We're talking about a set of like bite-sized visualization exercises, which can transform your hang-ups and into boundless new year confidence.
Okay.
Courage and creativity. The tools were derived from the LA-based psychologist Phil Schultz and Barry Michaels, whose client lists read like a who's who of Hollywood, you know, fame.
Okay.
Although their methods have been around for a while, they've gained new prominence thanks to actors like Jonah Hill and his documentary and some other notable names.
Mm-hmm.
A tool is something that can change your inner state immediately in real time, Stewart tells Hill in the doc. It takes an experience that is normally unpleasant and turns it into an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing is you don't need to fly to L.A. to shell out a bunch of money for a therapy session. Stutz and Michaels give away a bunch of tools for free on their website.
Okay, nice.
If you're prone to procrastination, there's a tool or several for that. If you feel you need extra boost of resilience and hopefulness, there's a tool for that. Tap. You can go into that. So just looking at this here, let me find the site exactly. It is thetoolsbook.com. It's all one word, thetoolsbook.com. I have not checked that out myself, but I'm going to take a look at it.
Yeah.
Start a journal.
Yeah.
Start a journal. It is hard to mess that up. It is. Yeah.
The starting part is not the issue. It's the continuing part that can become a challenge.
But okay.
I've got to pick mine back up. You know, I haven't touched it in over a year.
And here's a little thing right there with that, what you were saying there, Beth, because you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think here's where the little victory comes in. Start a journal.
Yes.
Doesn't say keep up a journal.
Exactly.
Doesn't say make it, just start a journal. Just get one going. Get it running. If you start it in January and you don't see it again until July, that's okay. You started a journal.
Right.
And I think in that respect, it's important to remember who the boss is. You are.
Right.
You're in charge here. You mm-hmm. set the rules. You set right. the standards. If you're feeling, I meant to start a journal on the first and I didn't. It's okay.
It's okay.
The boss is okay with that.
Yeah.
If you're okay with that, you're okay. I did this to myself the other day. And I'll share this with the audience. I don't know how often this happens to people. Do you make yourself laugh very often in your own head? Do you do
no.
something, say something that you make yourself laugh? I do this from time to time. It's one of my favorite things that happens to me.
Okay.
I was driving home, and I'm in my head, and I'm angry because I'm sick of nitpicking. I can't stand nitpicking. I don't have this as a pet peeve, but it's right there. It's getting really close to being one of my pet peeves.
Okay.
Is people who nitpick. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm like, God, these nitpickers. They nitpick at this. They nitpick at that. And then I realize I'm nitpicking nitpickers. I'm doing it in my head.
Yes.
I'm doing the same thing. And I laughed out loud.
Wonderful.
Sam was completely thrown off by this. He did not know what I was laughing. Just out of nowhere, this huge laugh came out of
me. Right.
Mm-hmm. We are our own bosses, and mm-hmm. we are in charge of our own happiness, our own mm-hmm. things. I know that it's not as easy as that. I understand. We have a chemical balance in our brains.
Right.
We have society to deal with, all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it hurts to remind yourself from time to time who's in charge.
Right. And with the journaling, sometimes people don't know what to journal. What do I put in a journal? Mm-hmm. I've never done that. The story you just told would have been a great journal entry.
Right.
And then
right.
mm-hmm. 2 years from now, when you look back, you could read it again and go, oh, and laugh even a second time
absolutely.
At exactly
yeah,
what
you
just
remember.
Happened. Yeah.
And writing's magical.
Oh, yeah.
Writing is so much fun. Even if you're just writing something simple and basic, mm-hmm. it can be such a great creative outlet.
Right. And before we were talking about tools, and one of the tools that with my ADHD, if the less steps I have to do something, the more likely I am to do it.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've done, a tool that I've picked up, is I do a positive journal. I do mm-hmm. a gratitude journal. I keep that in my bathroom.
Nah.
So that when I'm getting ready in the morning, I see it, I do it, and it's done for the day.
Right on. Mm-hmm.
And it's one less step for me to have to remember, oh, I need to go to this room to do it at this time. It's just there, and it's my visual reminder. Oh, yeah, I want to make sure I get this done today.
Mm, that's a good
there
one.
There you go.
Stop stressing over sleep. fretting over your nightly 40 winks, perhaps you don't need every single one of them after all. Professor Russell Foster is on a mission to silence the sergeant majors of sleep who swear by an unintangible 8 hours of shut-eye. The perfect night of sleep varies enormously from person to person, he explains. The mm-hmm. key thing is working out how much we need individually. It could be a few as 6 hours or as many as 10, depending on who you are.
Right.
Foster, who heads up the University of Oxford's Sleep and Circadian Neuroscience Institute, believes one of the biggest enemies of sleep is, ironically, anxiety about not getting enough of it.
Yep.
We've all been there, laying in bed. I have to sleep.
How many
sleep.
Kids
I
just...
I need to sleep. Yeah. I can't sleep.
That happened last night in my house.
Yeah.
My older one came out and goes, Mom, I'm scared. I'm like, what are you scared of? I'm scared I'm not going to be able to fall asleep today.
Yeah.
Well, being scared of it's not going to help you. So, you know, go back in. Just focus on your breathing. Just try to relax your body. He never came out again.
Mm. So, it must have worked.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's one that you know, every kid just went through a couple weeks ago with
yes.
Christmas and everything. So,
mm-hmm.
all right, man. The next one, I just want you to chill out, like literally, just chill out, man. Chill out. What are you stressing so much for? Wild swimming has boomed in recent years, so just chill out and get to a lake or a river and swim. Maybe not right now, but
maybe a pool.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Wild swimming has boomed in the recent years, but a growing body of dippers are getting their health kicks from wintry waters. Cold water aficionado Dark Dr. Mark Hoppner has spent his career as a consultant and enthusiast researcher researching ways to keep patients warm during surgery. But in his recent book, Chill, The Cold Water Swim Cure, he turned a scientific eye on winter swimming and provides evidence of its power to heal both body and mind.
Hmm.
The starting point for Harper was the resiliency of our body's reactions to the stresses of surgery and cold water are identical. Interesting.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm.
Exposing yourself to cold builds your strength. It literally builds character, I guess.
Interesting.
every time everybody's ever said that to you, I guess there's a little bit of truth to that.
Okay. I would check this out with your physician before you do it, because there may be some conditions that would not be good for.
And then, you know, safety is obviously something you want to take into consideration with winter swimming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that there's many people out there that would handle this in a unprofessional or silly manner, but I do think that you need to, in today's day and age, mention all those things. Yes. and also,
but more reason to do a polar plunge.
There you go.
It'll build
character. We've got one going on for Special Olympics right now.
Mm-hmm. There are many health benefits you can ask many Russians and Europeans about, as far as taking a cold dip in the water and getting out and that kind of thing.
Now, me personally, I prefer to do it in like June or July in Lake Superior. Because Lake Superior is still only about, 32, 33 degrees at that time of year. Yeah. But the benefit is you jump in. And then you can jump right back out and lay it on a hot rock.
There you go.
Warm up. It's exhilarating.
Set manageable fitness goals.
Yes.
Body coach Joe Wicks hardly needs any introduction. Some 3 million people a day turn into his lockdown workouts on YouTube. But he gets a mention here for his first steps to fitness program, ideal if you're starting out to returning from a layoff. Wick's approach means your fitness sessions are never going to take more than 15 minutes out of your day, and there's no pricey gym membership or special equipment required. My favorite kind of working out is that. That's the only kind of working out I do. I don't have anything against gyms or gym memberships or anything like that, to each their own, but I love the old school workouts that I do that my father taught me. Mm-hmm. And they are very simple, and they don't take much time. And they're all without having the pressures of a gym or a personal trainer or anything like that. Yes, it is on you to keep to these things.
Right.
But it's also on you to set your bar. And like, hey, I only have to do this many reps. You're not keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for some people like myself, I have trouble doing it if it's just me. If I have a workout partner to help keep me accountable and say, okay, we're going to go do this together, I'm more likely to do it. So maybe figuring out if that's what you need to do to continue to be motivated to do that.
Or having the small bites, like you said, that's if it's only 5, 10, 15 minutes, but you could maybe get 2 of them or 3 of them in a day in between other stuff, that's another great way to get it done.
And go with your gut. A good New Year's resolution might be to try new things. You're curious about kamachi. You want to try different foods. It's a good one.
Yeah.
And it's those little victories. Hey, I tried this today. I put up some of my resolution.
Just because you try it doesn't mean you have to like it.
Very true. I think these are all really good ones.
Yeah.
It's not about like setting some, bar that's so low that, an ant could reach it or anything like that. It's just about building up yourself, your confidence, and also, feeling good about your day to day, the beginning of your year. So much gets put into that. How many of us remember January 3rd? Last year, do you remember how if you had a good January 5th, or any of these kind of things? Like we put so much stock into this stuff, and it's important, I think, to give yourself not only grace, but to give yourself these little wins when you can.
Absolutely.
Take a break. Come back. Get some more fun and take you to the top of the hour right here on The Morning Show at WFHR. Welcome back to The Morning Show here on WFHR, locally grown radio. 9:52 on the clock. Melissa, Beth, and James, and we are going to take you right to the top of the hour with some good stuff here. And we got to usually have a Danny Wright story in right here. And this is actually not a Danny Wright story, but it makes me think of one. The Tiger King. That whole thing. I don't know if there were many times in society where we are all on the same page of like watching something, and then like a day later, like anybody else feel like they need a shower? anybody else feel really nasty from watching this show, like and being entertained by this show or whatever? I never felt good about it, but I also at the time there was so little to talk about, and it was so hard to get people to. It was so hard to find topics and stories that didn't have to do with the pandemic,
right?
And it was so, especially doing this kind of show where we don't have a lot of the low hanging fruit that other morning shows have or anything. Mm-hmm. So this was one that got brought up and talked about. I do think there were some positives to come from that show, though.
Okay.
And I think one of
really?
The biggest ones may have just come about. You may need to reconsider your plans to buy a baby puma to get through the winter blues. President Biden just signed into law the Big Cat Public Safety Act this week, banning unlicensed people from owning, transporting, and breeding big cats. Tigers, lions, pumas, jaguars, all the above. Caring for these animals will be left mostly to zoos, sanctuaries, and universities, while the rest of us will make do, you know, cuddling a stuffed animal or something like that. The way this should have been.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There should never have been a Tiger King or whatever, any of these things. Mm-mm. Think about the ridiculousness of that. This fool called himself a king of tigers. A human being called himself a king of animals, and he's not a comic book character. Like, how ridiculous can you get as a person, let alone, you know, plenty of other things? This is a good law, people. This is needed. This is important. It is good. Is it the biggest thing in the world? No, not by any means. We got a lot of bigger fish to fry here and everything, but this is huge. This is going to go a long ways for a lot of people and a lot of safety, a lot of not just the health and well-being of these animals, but of people who are knucklehead enough to bring them into their homes.
I was gonna say, it's sad that we had to make it a law.
Yeah.
Who were the, I can't think of their names right now, the famous Las Vegas act. They had the white Bengal tiger.
I can see them in my head.
Yeah, Siegfried and Roy, was
yes,
it?
Yes, that's
Siegfried
it.
And Roy, yep.
How long, I mean, our whole lives, they were over there in Vegas doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Doing their thing. They've been doing this for, and they were doing it a lot longer than the three of us were alive.
Right.
And what happened, how did that story end?
Yeah.
Even that story ended that way.
Yeah.
Like, these, it's not, it doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
Why would you do this? Why
right.
have this? It's a great law to see. It's a really, and to me, that's a good story of the day. That is one of those good stories of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of funny because it came about through a not maybe a good story of the day.
Yeah.
This one's a little more of a cringer. This seemed like it would be perfect case of Encyclopedia Brown. You know how there are those park benches with plaques that pay tribute to someone with a little inscription?
Mm-hmm.
We have many of them here in Rapids, and there's many of them probably where you are listening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, someone in the Canadian town of Calden found one that was honoring someone who hasn't died yet.
Oh.
It said, Kathy in the Forest, your smile said it all. September 7th, 1954, December 6th, 2022. They posted a photo online, and there was some debate about what it meant, but it turns out there was a simple explanation. It was probably just a typo. Someone found an obituary for a Kathy with those dates, except she passed away in December of the last year, so someone probably just put 2022 by accident.
Okay.
But that's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't right. Might want to make sure that stuff's checked. Like triple, quadruple checked.
Yeah.
Seems like it at least. this is an interesting one, and it's a good story of the day, and I think many of might have heard about it already, but for those that did not, when three employees of a New York McDonald's were forced to accept the fact that they weren't going home during the Christmas storm that blanketed the North U.S., they opened up the store to stranded motorists and ended up hosting 50 people over the Christmas weekend.
Wow.
Awesome.
Amherst, like neighboring Buffalo, received upwards of 40 inches of snow, and it wasn't long before police began propping people off at the store at Sweet Home Road and Sheldon Drive last Friday. Quote, we accepted the fact that we weren't going home, so we might as well open up, and said Kristen Cole, one of the workers there. We figured someone might need some help. Expecting maybe a dozen, more than 50 New Yorkers sheltered in the store, which even before the act of kindness was known for the Sweet Home McDonald's, or Sweet Home McDonald's. That's what they called it.
Oh, okay.
Because of the street it was built on.
Ah.
We fed them and had the coffees hot and hot chocolates going. Saturday, we had the Bills football game on, and they chatted amongst themselves and mingled while they kept warm and fed people. Dozens of stories of humans helping humans were published over the Christmas weekend as a patch of terrible weather coincided with the holiday that celebrates goodwill towards others.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were a lot of those good stories out there. And I know that some of them, I seen some myself just happening, not necessarily, right. You know, interacting, but some of them just going on.
Mm-hmm.
I saw at least three different times the people helping somebody that was stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Three different separate occasions. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't help them, but no, I'm kidding. I got out and helped one of them. In Buffalo, a resident couple opened his home to a tour bus of 10 South Koreans when they got stuck and knocked on his door asking for shovels. While elsewhere, a group of strangers found shelter by breaking a window and entering a school before leaving a note asking for forgiveness for their impromptu lock-in. Back in Amherst, people from all over the state ended up at the McDonald's, including a seven-month-old baby and her mother. Utility crews and several animals were also in there.
Wow.
Just a wonderful act of kindness right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
This weather, as rough as it is, I like what it can bring out of us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if without the weather, we would have the opportunity to see some of these things.
Right.
Being in ourselves, let alone in each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think that silver linings are something that are not that hard to find sometimes. And this weather has brought us some of that.
Absolutely.
Great show today, ladies. Thank you so much for making our first show of the year. A banger, a good
Thank
one.
You.
Nicely done.
All right. Yes. Well done.
Have yourself a great day, Melissa.
Yep. You too, James.
Have a good one, Beth.
You too, James.
We'll talk with you in just a few. Playmakers coming up. Seth going to be in with us for that. Coming up right here on Mornings at WFHR, locally grown radio.